And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sidney Wildsmith.
God love the prophets. They give us fair warning that change is coming. Today, we explore a little-known effort by the U.S. government to save the grand picture of our land before it's too late. This is our wake-up call to pay attention to this important effort within the BLM to save our vistas and unique places. That's all coming up when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? Pretty paradise, put up a parking lot.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
Apple Computers announced today that they were unveiling their newest iMac. Lots of brushed aluminum and glass, making it greener. It's fast and it's sleek. Mac addicts around the world began drooling on their old plastic keyboards while they stared at the newest iMac on their old Mac screens. I know what it's like to lust for new technologies. I'm a shameless collector of MP3 players and recorders. I've got old four-track cassette recorders littering my music studio like long-dead boxes of donuts. I'm sure you've heard that Richard Branson, that bigger-than-life CEO of Virgin Airways and Virgin Music, and a great friend of the environment, is launching, literally, Virgin Galactic, making suborbital spaceflight a reality for ordinary millionaires.
Well, hello, I'm Richard Branson. We've been fortunate enough to have achieved some pretty extraordinary things at Virgin over the years. Virgin Galactic is now well on its way to becoming the world's first commercial space line. We're designing our spacecraft so that each of our passengers will have the room and the freedom to enjoy the amazing sensation of weightlessness. Large panoramic windows will allow you to see clearly the curved Earth over 100 kilometers below. Our suborbital space trips promise to be the most intense and wonderful experiences that our passengers have ever had. I spotted this cover of an Australian popular science magazine which had run a great story on Virgin Galactic. Holidays in Space, book now. It seems almost unbelievable, but it is the reality. Every day, people from all walks of life and many different countries are making reservations with us to experience space for themselves. Well, I hope you'll be as excited and inspired by Virgin Galactic's mission as I am. And I'll see you up there.
If I had the money, I'd go. I recently happened upon a website for Dubai. It is literally being promoted as the new world capital. And it is like nothing I've ever really imagined. It's like Scientific American on steroids. The centerpiece is the Burj Dubai, which will be the tallest building in the world, with 200 stories. It is freakishly astonishing. I hope someday to see it. Everything is shifting. The old third world is now more like the seventh world. In New York City yesterday, heavy rains flooded subways and closed the airports. I hardly heard a thing about it in the news. And in case you missed it, the annual monsoon rains in India and Bangladesh, the heaviest in over 50 years, displaced tens of millions of people. Estimates are that 14 million people have been forced to move. I haven't seen a single story on it in the news. Everything is changing so fast. It's hard to know what has significance any longer, and that's why I find today's story so appealing. I doubt that many of you know that the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, has a program to protect our natural landscapes. That's right, our natural landscapes. It's called the National Landscape Conservation System. There's a small but dedicated staff who are identifying and listing lands and places that deserve to be preserved because they are disappearing. Vast unbroken vistas, unique rock formations, special rivers and trails that have existed for eons of time and formed the backdrop to Native Americans, our early Western settlers, dusty Old West towns, small towns living through the Great Depression, and now, small towns and communities that represent a way of life deeply rooted in our Western traditions. The system is hopefully going to receive a mandate from Congress to actually preserve, to whatever degree possible, these vestiges of our golden age of destiny. We visit with the director of the NLCS, the National Landscape Conservation System, during our second segment. But right now, it's time for the weekly Earth Summit. Welcome to the Weekly Earth Summit, the most important 15 minutes on Earth. I'm your host, Sidney Wildsmith, and we continue now with our Summer Summit series. Our first guest is the president of the Sierra Club, Carl Pope, who has some great news and some great challenges. Carl?
T. Boone Pickens sold his coal stocks this summer. Wall Street analysts say you should too. America's first cellulosic ethanol plant, fueling your car with wood waste from pulp mills, just broke ground in Georgia. The demand for solar power is so great, it's hard to get panels for your roof. 1 million hybrid cars have been sold, and sales of inefficient pickup trucks are slumping. But government still gets in the way. The new energy economy is hampered by regulations. You can't ship wind turbines from state to state. If you generate solar or wind power in your home or business, you may not be able to sell it back to the grid. Wind farms can't get access to transmission lines. In some cities, it's still illegal to have a reflective roof to lower your cooling bill. We need a sustainable, competitive energy sector, and government needs to encourage, not cripple, innovation.
Thank you, Carl. With all of the good news about the enormous economic investments in clean technologies comes a long-range vision that will need to be addressed. We now welcome Dr. Charles Kennel, whose job it is to think about jobs of the future. Dr. Kennel.
It's very interesting. People are, some people are very interested in building prize-winning buildings, green buildings. They have very small carbon and environmental footprints. And so they build these wonderful adjustable buildings, with automated systems that adjust the sunlight and the temperature and the humidity and use as much passive control as they can. These are all very advanced buildings. And then they build the building, they win a prize, and then what happens? The client of the architect has a business to run. They live in this building. And so they turn it over to their usual staff, who are the janitors, to operate. And very often, these folks don't have enough education and experience to run a complicated building. Well, is anybody trained in building management in today's schools of architecture? Anybody thought about the need to have a PhD level or a master's degree level building engineer operate a green complex of buildings? Well, the answer is people are beginning to think about it, but in order to get the schools to change their curriculum and to turn out a new type of graduate, the graduate specialty and certify it and so forth, all the things that people do, those are going to take a decade or more. But you can see that at the end of the day, if you were to really tighten up your education and training, you would then create a much larger demand for highly efficient but very sophisticated buildings. That would make a big difference. In some countries, I think in Britain where I just was, the built environment is responsible for about 40% of its greenhouse gas emissions. So being very careful about how you construct new buildings and how you operate them, and in their case, how you retrofit older buildings, all of that becomes an important goal for the future, and it takes a different kind of training and outlook to begin to accomplish in that arena. it will be done. People are going to do it, but it's going to take a while.
Thank you, Dr. Kennel. Dr. Mark Beckhoff is a champion of animal intelligence, cognition, and emotions. He recently returned from an international conference which discussed such issues and wishes to share his observations with you now. Dr. Beckhoff.
There were really interesting papers on culture and animals, and I think I've told you in the past, I've got this four-volume encyclopedia coming out on human-animal relationships. So I was very sensitive to, you know, what issues were really pertinent. I hate to just come across in such a kind of Western way, but there was a lot of sympathy, of course, for local indigenous people who, say, hunt animals, but yet show respect and reverence for them. There was absolutely not one person at this meeting who sanctioned whaling, and there wasn't one person at this meeting who felt that, you know, there was any justification for Japan or Iceland or other countries to, you know, keep on or resume whaling. But there were a lot of discussions about local indigenous people who still hunt, you know, because they can't get alternative sources of protein or something like that.
Thank you, Dr. Beckhoff. And finally, Ben Lowe brings his commitment to a spiritual and moral imperative to address some of the dilemmas we will face in the years ahead. Ben?
Did you hear about the vast underground lake some scientists have found in the Darfur region of Sudan? It hit the news in July of 2007 and then was quickly followed up with a caution that the lake had probably dried up a long time ago. Now, why would the possibility of an underground lake, as big as it is, make headlines all over the world? Well, it occurred in a region that has been plagued with an ongoing genocide that many experts believe is fueled by environmental degradation and a lack of natural resources. The UN has stated that there is little prospect of peace in Darfur unless the environmental issues are first addressed. So scientists hope that finding a new source of water will help end the mindless violence there. This is a tragic story that people need to hear more about. One of the big objections I still face in my work on environmental stewardship is that we're focusing too much on the little critters and thus overlooking all the real big atrocities of today, such as the war in Darfur. The truth, though, is that these issues are all very much interconnected. We cannot live apart from our environment. No one should have to choose between caring for the planet or caring for people. That's a shameful choice. We must find better ways of caring for both.
Thanks, Ben. Change is inevitable, but it seems many of us should have the right to keep what we value as communities here and around the world. 200-story buildings are impressive, but so is the sound of a whippoorwill, or the deep gurgle of water over a simple branch in a river where I sit alone. Coming up, a most amazing little-known entity of our public land system that has the task of defining the value of serenity and grandeur and working to keep such available for generations to come, when your voice of the earth continues, here on the Wild Side News.
Seems ago that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. And they charged the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.